Great. We went out yesterday to, is it Hut Bay or Hout Bay? Had some fish and chips. Went by Landudno, and that was pretty cool. Anyway, it's great to be back here in Cape Town. I started out, went to Habarone, then Amtata, then Harare, Windhoek, Cape Town, next Port Elizabeth, then a little trip through Durban, back to Johannesburg. So it's really great being with you. Now, Paul asked me to basically preach on whatever topic I wanted to do, and I always want to talk about faith. So our lesson this morning, then, is going to come from Hebrews chapter 11 on living by faith. All right, great. Now, let me give a little bit of background to the book. The book of Hebrews was written to a group of Christians, like second generation, if you will, Christians. They've been in the church for a while. In Hebrews 10, 32 through 35, he reminds them, he says, "Remember those days. You stood your ground in a great contest in the face of suffering. They'd done great things. They'd suffered much. They'd been through much glory. But they were tempted to get a little tired, weary. I don't know, another 30 years, can I really keep it up?" In fact, maybe that might be a bit like some of you here in the church in Cape Town. In verse 35, in fact, let's turn to Hebrews 10, 35. We're going to be in Hebrews 11. Let's go to 10:35. We can tell that they're struggling a bit. Because look at the admonition in Hebrews 10:35. He says, "So do not throw away your confidence. It'll be richly rewarded." The purpose then of Hebrews is so that we could make it. So that we could stay in the faith. And the outline of Hebrews goes something like this. Basically says, Jesus is awesome and amazing in this way. Therefore, this is what you should do in order to make it to heaven, in order to live by faith. So, for example, in Hebrews 1, 1 through 3, he says, Jesus is greater than all the prophets. And then in Hebrews 1, 4 through 14, he says, Jesus is greater than the angels. The angels were mere messengers. And Jesus is the message. And then in Hebrews 3, 1 through 5, he says, Jesus is greater than Moses. And for the Jews, that's fighting words, greater than Moses. No way. And then in Hebrews 4, 14 through 5, 10, he says, Jesus is greater even than the high priest. And Hebrews 7, 1 through 28, that's where it gets really deep. He talks about the priesthood of Melchizedek. And Jesus is a priest according to Melchizedek. And the greatness of that, greater than the Aaronic priesthood. And then in Hebrews 7, he also says, Jesus is greater than Abraham. And then he goes on in Hebrews 8, 1 through 13, he says, the covenant that Jesus established is much greater than the old covenant. The old covenant was just a shadow. The reality is the covenant created by Jesus. And then in Hebrews 9, 1 through 11, he says the heavenly tabernacle, the one that Jesus dwells in, is far greater than the earthly tabernacle. The earthly tabernacle is like, remember, some of you old people, remember you had those little boxes, the diorama, you put the little figures in there, remember those things? He says the temple's like that compared to the real temple, the one that Jesus lives in. And then Hebrews 9, 12 through 10, 18, he says, the sacrifices of Jesus are far greater than any sacrifice in the old covenant. In fact, the sacrifices of blood, and the blood of bulls and goats never took away the sin. And but then, so these are the things. And when I've taught on Hebrews, I kind of run out of words. Great, awesome, amazing, fantastic, wonderful. I need a thesaurus. And then he says, therefore, and there are several therefores. Therefore, let us. For example, in Hebrews 2, 1 through 18, he says, therefore, pay attention. Now, how do you feel when somebody says to you, hey, pay attention? You go, oh, why? Wasn't I paying attention? If you want to make it to heaven, you need to pay attention. You can't let your mind wander. He uses the illustration in Greek of a ship that's lost its mooring. When a ship loses its mooring in a river, it starts going downstream. And yet, if you're not paying attention to Jesus, you don't even realize that you're drifting downstream. So if you want to make it to heaven, you need to pay attention. That's his first admonition. And his second admonition is in Hebrews 3, 6 through 4, 13. He says, make every effort. I don't know about you, but I want to make it to the promised land. He says, if you want to make it to the promised land, you can't just sit back and sort of float in there. I remember singing a song, in Kids' Kingdom. You can't make it to heaven on a pair of roller skates. I don't know if you ever sung that song. Right. It doesn't work that way. He says, think about the Jews who figuratively left bondage to sin in Egypt, and their bodies were scattered across the desert. Why? Because they wandered into unbelief and disobedience. He says, don't be like them. Keep your eyes fixed on the promised land. Make every effort. His third admonition is in Hebrews 5, 11 through 6, 20, where he says, grow up! Wow. How'd you feel if somebody tells you to grow up? But you know what, brothers and sisters? If you don't grow up, you may not make it. You can't settle for where you already were. We need to keep growing. If you read that section, we need to keep growing in our knowledge of the scriptures and in our ability to distinguish between good and evil. We need to understand the scriptures. If you've been a Christian for 15 or 20 years, you ought to know the Bible. Quick mental quiz. What's the theme of Hosea? Wow. Maybe you need to grow up. You get the idea. But that's not the main focus. The main admonition is the fourth admonition. And that's the one we're going to be studying. In Hebrews 11, starting in verse 1, it says, if you want to make it to heaven, you need to live by faith. And that's the title of our sermon. So that's the introduction. Now let's get into our sermon. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of things that were visible. The key to perseverance, the key to staying faithful, the key to making it to heaven is to live by faith. And this is the main theme. It's faith is belief in things unseen. Every single thing that is important is invisible. And everything that you can see is unimportant. In order to live by faith, you have to deny your senses. It's hard to deny your senses, because your senses are what attack your mind all the time. And the world lives according to things that can be seen. Now, if you read the paper, I was reading the paper this morning, a little bit about Boko Haram and a little bit about the thing in France. If you read the newspaper, does it appear that God is in control? No. But he is. Everything that is of value is unseen. And faith is belief in things that are unseen. You know, in some sense, success is the enemy of faith. Success is something you can see. And some of us as Christians live off of those successes. By the way, I don't know about you, but I kind of actually like success. I kind of like the fact that we have a new sister in the body. That's pretty awesome. But my faith cannot be based on success, because success is something that can be seen. Now, Hebrews 11, it's like the honor roll of the men and women of faith. What do all these men and women have in common? They believed in things that were not seen. They welcomed things from a distance from which we're not at that distance. We have what they did not have. Why were these men and women commended? Why are they heroes of the faith? Because they refused what the world calls greatness and staked everything on God. They refused to have their path of life determined by what is seen. We have something much greater. Philippians 3, 4 through 9. I'll just kind of paraphrase. Paul said, as for things that are seen, I was the Pharisee of Pharisees. I was of the tribe of Benjamin. He had the best education. He had the best education at the best school. He was the student of Gamaliel. From the world's perspective, he had wealth, power, honor. And he said, for me, all those things are garbage, trash, comparing to knowing Jesus. You can't see Jesus. You can't see God. You can't see heaven. Everything that is important is invisible. You know, I wanted to use the example of Nebuchadnezzar, actually Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But I, for the sake of time, I'm going to skip that. I'm going to use an example instead. It's my friend Cook Hong. Cook Hong is, he and his wife lead our sister church in Vietnam. I remember the first time I met Cook Hong and his wife, I was in Cambodia. I said, so how's it going there in Vietnam? And they both just broke down into tears. They were sobbing. I thought, wow, it's not going so great over there. They felt isolated. They didn't know what they were doing. They were young. They had no training. Then I actually went and visited them there in Ho Chi Minh, and the church was doing great. In that church, you cannot share your faith. They can't share their faith, at least not directly. And they have no visitors to church ever, no visitors, because the church is illegal. Cook Hong and his wife had been kicked out of their home three different times, just kicked out on the street, simply because they'd had a church meet in their home. It's pretty tough. I remember going there, and there were 79 chairs there. There are 78 members, one chair for me. On Tuesday night, there were 78 people there. And the traffic in Ho Chi Minh City is tough. Wednesday night, 78 people there. Anyway, Cook Hong and his wife, they decided to plant a church in Hanoi, the capital of the communist country. And 1 week before they were going to leave, a man broke into their apartment and beat Cook Hong to a pulp, bloody and bruised, right in front of his wife and children. 1 week later, they went to Hanoi to plant the church. They got to Hanoi the next day. There's a policeman at their door. And he said, did you come here to plant a church? What would you have done? If faith is based on things unseen, what's the smart thing to do? He said, yeah, we came here to plant a church. He says, are you that group that teaches you have to follow the Bible and the Bible only to be a Christian? Cook Hong said, yeah, that's us. He says, are you the ones that say in order to be a disciple, you have to be totally committed or whatever he said? I don't know exactly. And Cook Hong said, yeah, that's us. He said, well, I want to study the Bible. And he was the first baptism in the Hanoi Church of Christ. You know, faith involves things you can't see. And if you could see it, it wouldn't be faith. That's kind of the whole point. They didn't know what they were stepping into when they moved to Hanoi, but they believed that God would bless them. So let's go through this passage. Oh, wait, I want to bring out one thing. It says, this is what the ancients were commended for. They looked at what can be seen. They look at the world, what the world had to offer, and they said, no, we're looking forward to a better kingdom, a heavenly one. It says here, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what is visible. As a scientist, say amen, that's exactly right. Big bang, nothing, everything, right? Awesome. But that's not his point. His point is everything that can be seen was made by one who's unseen. Therefore, by definition, unseen things are far greater than anything you can see. And then he talks about our friend Abel. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, he still speaks even though he's dead. We don't know a lot about Abel. We know this. He gave a sacrifice by faith. And we're still talking about him. I don't know about you, but when I die, I hope people will say about me, man, that guy, he had faith. And we're still talking about him. What about Enoch? By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. But before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Let me ask you a question. Do you believe that if you staked your entire life on God, that he would take care of you, that he would reward you? In fact, that he would give you a life far greater than anything you could ever achieve by your own effort. Do you really believe that? Enoch believed that so thoroughly that God just took him up to heaven. It's kind of awesome, actually. And then what about Noah? Let's talk about Noah for a little while. Now, that guy's faith kind of blows me away. I don't know about you, but it blows me away. Says, by faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen. Now, notice this. He was warned about things not yet seen. Final judgment has not yet been seen. You tell your neighbor, you tell your fellow worker, yeah, I'm getting ready for the judgment day. They go, oh, okay, whatever. I remember back in my graduate student days, I lived in a dorm there. And we were always having Bible studies. And this guy, my next-door neighbor guy, he was an atheist guy. And he and his buddies were laughing at us. He says, what are you studying for, some kind of final exam or something? Well, yeah, actually, we are. Actually, the university doesn't give the grades. When warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. Now, God says to Noah, Noah, I want you to build an ark. And I like to imagine Noah saying to God, well, what's an ark? Well, an ark is a boat. Well, okay, well, what's a boat? Well, it's a thing that kind of hollow that you make so you can float on the water. What water? The water that's going to come. What are you talking about? There's going to be a flood. All right? Well, what's a flood? A flood is when it rains and rains and rains and all the water comes up. All right? Okay, sure. Now, tell me about this boat. How big does it need to be? About 300 meters long. Okay. Why build a boat that big? Because of the animals. What animals? The animals that are going to come. Well, why are they going to come? Because I'm going to make them come. All right. Fine. When are they going to come? In 100 years. And Noah built the ark. I would have liked to have been there for the conversation with his wife. I don't know his wife's name. I'll call her Noah's wife. And he said, hey, Noah's wife, God told me to build an ark. She said, so what's this God look like? Can't see him. He's invisible. Okay? So you're supposed to build an ark. Well, what's an ark? Well, it's a boat. Well, what's a boat? It's a thing that's kind of hollowed out that makes you float on the water. Well, why would you want to build a boat? Because of this flood. Well, what's a flood? Well, it's when it rains like crazy and, you know, awesome. So, you know, how big is this boat? 300 meters long. Why so big? Because of the animals. What animals? You know, the ones that are going to come in 100 years. You know, if you're going to be a disciple of Jesus, if you're going to walk by faith, you just might look a little bit foolish. How about the neighbors? How about the conversation with the neighbors? Because everybody else is planting crops and all this other stuff, and Noah's building this massive wooden structure. Noah, what are you building there? An ark. Well, what's an ark? I mean, can see your build. All right, what's an ark for? For the flood. What flood? The flood that's coming. Why so big? Because of the animals. What animals? The ones that are going to come. Why do you think they're going to come? Because this voice from the sky just told me that. And you believe that. Okay, good. Good for you, Noah. By faith, Noah believed in things not yet seen. You know, Noah preached for 100 years. How many conversions? Zero. He believed in conversions, and yet he didn't see a single one. We get discouraged when our Bible talk, we've been out sharing our faith, and our Bible talk hasn't had a visitor for a little while. We're like, I don't know, I don't think God's with us anymore. 100 years, zero conversions. And yet, since he's died, how many have come to God through the work of Noah? Vast numbers. You know what? When the rain came down and they sealed up that boat, those people had been laughing at Noah. They weren't laughing anymore. Because faith is belief in things unseen. What about Abraham? Let's read about Abraham. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went. Now, in the book of Hebrews, faith and obedience are used as synonyms. In Hebrews 3, it says, they were not able to enter God's rest because of unbelief. And then the next thing it says, they were not able to enter because of their disobedience. And so if we believe, we will obey. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as an inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. This is a city that no one can see. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sands of the seashore. God said to Abraham, go. I'm sure Abraham said to God, where? And God said, I'm not telling you. You just go. Well, help me out. Just give me a hint. Like north, south, east, or west. God says, any one of them doesn't matter. Just go. You know what? In our Christian life, if you know where you're going, that's not faith. We have everything planned out and mapped out, and that's fine. I think we should make plans. That's a godly thing to do. You read Proverbs, there's some good stuff about that. But you know what? Faith involves going to places that you couldn't even imagine. Again, I would have liked to be there for the conversation with the wife, with Sarai. Hey, Sarai, we're moving. Pack up. Well, where are we going? I don't know. But why are we going there? God told me. So did it come down on a piece of paper or did he appear to you? No, I just heard a voice. You know, by faith, Abraham walked out of Ur. You know, in a sense, if you're a disciple, Abraham is like a foreshadow of all of us. In fact, in Hebrews 4, 16 and 17, it says, Abraham is the father of all who are saved by faith. All of us, like Abraham, walked away from everything. Abraham had comfort. He had presumably a job. He had family. He had everything kind of all set up. But God says, you need to leave those things behind. And by faith, Abraham did that. Are you ready for the Christian adventure? You know, sometimes it involves risk. It involves, I don't know where God's taking me. It might involve losing your job. It might involve losing significant relationships. We need to follow Abraham out of Ur. The life of Abraham is like a type, if you will, of us as we follow Jesus. And Abraham lived the rest of his life in tents. He was wandering around in a place that was a picture of what his descendants would later receive. And in a sense, that's like us as well. Because we are, in a sense, in heaven already, but not yet. That's what life in the kingdom is like. That's what life in the church is like. We've received salvation already, but not yet. And we're walking around the church, which is really a picture, a taste of what the kingdom of heaven will be like. And so Abraham walked around in the place that is a symbol of the promised land, a symbol of heaven. And Abraham did not receive what we've received. Abraham did not have the Bible. He did not have prophecies fulfilled. He did not have Jesus raised from the dead. He did not have the Holy Spirit living in him. And yet he walked out of her and he walked by faith. For the rest of his life, he literally walked by faith. Then God said to Abraham, 90 years old, you're going to be the father of many nations. Abraham, I'm sure, looked at himself. He thought, yeah, I think I still got it. Then he looked at Sarai, 80 years old. You know, menopause 40 years ago. Plus, she was barren anyway. It says in the Bible that Abraham did not waver in unbelief. How about you? As we enter into 2015, do you waver in unbelief? Or do you, like Abraham, believe that if God says it's going to happen, it's going to happen? In Romans 4, God says about Abraham that he believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. That's encouraging. You know, it says he believed God. Well, fine. What did he believe? He believed that if God said it was going to happen, it was going to happen. He staked everything on God and nothing on the world. That's what it means when it says that Abraham believed. And it's encouraging to me to know that it was credited to him as righteousness, because salvation is by faith. Now, Abraham became the father of many nations, literally and figuratively. He was the father of the Moabites, the father of the Edomites, the father of the Ishmaelites, the Arabs, and the father of the Israelites. He was literally became the father of many nations. And then figuratively, he's the father of everyone here who, like Abraham, has left Ur, the life of the things the world has to offer, and has left those things, has put their hand to the plow, and is not looking back, has become a disciple. Now, I'm going to skip verse 13 through 16 through now. For now, that's really the heart of this chapter. And I believe it's the heart of the whole book of Hebrews. We're going to come back to that. Let's finish Abraham's life here. By faith, Abraham, verse 17, when I keep forgetting to forward my PowerPoint. How are we doing here? All right, we're good. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned," Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. And figuratively speaking, he received Isaac back from death. So God says to Abraham, "Go to Mount Moriah and sacrifice your one and only son." Now, Abraham was a man of faith. When I think about the people in the Bible had the greatest faith, the ones that come to mind for me are Noah, Abraham, and Mary. I would have liked to have been there for that conversation between Mary and Joseph. That would have been an interesting one. Yeah, honest. Honest. God said to Abraham, "Take that son, that promised son, the one who I promised to you would be the father of many nations, the one who you actually believed I would give you, take him and kill him on Mount Moriah." That walk to Mount Moriah, talk about walking by faith. And what it says here is Abraham reasoned. By the way, faith does not mean you stop thinking or you stop using your brain. If you think that, you have the totally wrong concept of what faith is. So basically, the promise and the command were in direct opposition, apparently. The promise of being the father of many nations and the command to kill your son. So Abraham thought, God is real. God blesses those who earnestly seek him. He wants me to kill Isaac, but he told me through Isaac I'd be the father of many nations. 1 + 1 = 2. All right, when I kill him, God will raise him from the dead. Did God tell Abraham that he would raise Isaac from the dead? No. But faith said, that's the only option. Hard things come into our life. You know, the boss says, move over to here to a place where there's no church. Things that are seen said, go there. Faith says, don't. Relationships. You're single. You've been waiting for 20 years. No prospects. Awesome guy. Says he's spiritual. Says, hey. Appearances say, obviously. Faith says, I don't think so. You know, we need to follow Abraham out of Ur, but we also need to follow Abraham to Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah is where you place the things you're holding on to, even though you've been saved. Because figuratively, Abraham had already been saved, and yet he had something. He was holding on to it, and God says, you need to give it up. If you're going to follow Abraham to Moriah, you just might have to sacrifice something that God gave to you even. Think about that. Even something God gave to you, an accomplishment you made. You become this leader. You've established this ministry. And you might even have to give that up. The thing that, to some extent, your sense of self-worth is based on. But our self-worth is based on Jesus Christ. So by faith, Abraham offered up his son. The symbolism is incredible. Take your son, your only son. Can you think of somebody else who took his son, his only son, and sacrificed him? Sacrifice him on Mount Moriah. Where's Mount Moriah? That's Jerusalem. God asked Abraham to sacrifice his one and only son on the same mountain that God sacrificed his one and only son. On the third day. Do you notice that? On the third day. That's not a coincidence. Because in 1 Corinthians 15:4 it says that the Messiah would be raised from the dead on the third day according to the scriptures. What scripture? This one right here, Genesis 22. Because figuratively speaking, Abraham received his son back from the dead on the third day. And notice when they got to Mount Moriah, to the hill on which Jerusalem is built, Isaac carried the wood up the mountain that was going to be used for his own sacrifice. Can you think of another only son who was asked by his father to carry the wood up the same exact mountain that was to be used as a sacrifice? Are you ready to follow Abraham out of Ur and to Mount Moriah? Now let's go back to verse 13. I'm going to read verse 13 through 16. Like I said, unless I'm wrong, I believe this is really the heart of this chapter, and perhaps even of the whole book. So all these people were still living by faith when they died. Let me stop there. I mean, it's fairly simple. I mean, if just kind of break it all down, if you want to make it to heaven, just keep walking. If the day you die, you're walking by faith, you're going to walk into heaven. Now, we don't worry about the biblical thing about Hades and all that. You know, let's ignore that little detail. Let's just make it simple, okay? If you walk by faith to the day you die, you're going to make it. You're going to be in the promised land with God forever. And I'm telling you, it's going to be great. They were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. More than once in this passage, the Hebrew writer is kind of shaming us a little bit, saying, how could you fail to walk by faith? You have Jesus, greater than the prophets, and these guys didn't even have prophets. Greater than the angels, greater than the old covenant, and Noah and Abraham, they didn't even have this covenant. We have that what they didn't have. For them, it was something distant. It was vague. For us, how about Jesus on the cross? If that's not a source of faith that God could take care of the things in our life, I don't know what is. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking about the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they're longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. God has prepared a city for you. That's what's at the end of the journey. But you know what? If you want to get there, you better admit something, that you're an alien and a stranger. I'm not talking about UFO, alien. That means your country is not this country. As it said, as Paul said, this world is not our home. Paul said, our citizenship is in heaven. Now, how many of you prefer to fit in? Raise your hand if you like to fit in. The teenagers are pretending they don't like to fit in. Come on, let's be real. All right? Never mind, I won't go into all that. Never mind. I do actually still remember being a teen. It was a long time ago, but I do actually remember it. Yeah, we all want to fit in, but you know what? If you're going to live by faith, you're going to be a bit like Noah, who appeared just a little strange, just a little odd. Now, how about really strange and really odd? Now, thankfully to God, praise God, our strangeness is not that we wear weird clothes. It's not that we have different words and stuff. Hopefully not, you know. Some of us have our own little lingo, but it's not that we eat strange food. Our strangeness comes because of our ethic. Because we believe, like it says in the Sermon on the Mount, the way to greatness is through being a servant. The way to joy is through mourning and weeping and wailing. The way to richness is poverty. Does the world value humility? If you look around, does it appear that putting everybody in front of you is the way to get ahead? Does it look that way? No. So you just might be a little bit strange. You might be like a foreigner. Not an immigrant. Because when an immigrant goes to a country, what they want to do is they want to find a way to fit in. But we are not going to fit in. You know, this person who sits next to you in the office, the student who sits in front of you in school, the neighbor, don't plan on them thinking, oh, they're just like us. Because we're not like them. We're a city on a hill. We're a beacon of light. We're different. It says we're like foreigners, xenoi. We get the word xenophobic, which means hater of foreigners. And we're sojourners, parapedemos, temporary residents. The bottom line is this world is not my home. Now, my passport says citizen of the United States of America. But in my heart, I'm a citizen of no country in particular. To me, every country is the same. Yeah, I root for the U.S., win the Olympics and all that kind of stuff. That's fine. Because our strangeness is not that we don't root for South Africa and the All Blacks. Not the All Blacks. Those are the bad guys. That's New Zealand, right? I was trying to kind of relate with rugby, and I totally blew it. Springboks. By the way, I have like a shirt that y'all gave me last time I was here, Springboks. I wear that proudly, just so you know. Just so you know. Yeah, we're sojourners. One illustration I've heard is that life as a Christian is like living on a bridge. We left the old country. Our citizenship is not in this world, not if you're walking by faith. But we're not in the new country yet. We're not there. The church is a picture of heaven, but clearly it's not quite, you know, it's not quite. And when you're on a bridge, you don't build it, you don't plant a tree on a bridge. You don't place roots. We've left the old place and we're headed to the new place. That's what they were like. Abraham lived in a tent the rest of his life. It says if they were thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Abraham could have gone back anytime. He never went back. In fact, you could go back to Ur right now, just sitting there in the seat if you wanted to. You just could say, I give up. But they didn't, and they walked by faith. They were looking forward to a better country. How about you? A heavenly one. God is not ashamed to call you his people if you walk by faith. And then there's Moses. Verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. Moses had everything. I mean, if the world has stuff to offer, and it does, you know, Moses had it all. He was the adopted son of the most powerful and wealthy man in the world. Check it out. Clothes? Oh, man. Food? The ladies falling all over him. And he walked. And he lived the rest of his life as like a slave. Under the penalty of death. Because he chose to live like a slave amongst slaves. Amongst Israel. Who, of course, are a picture of the church. Because we are the heavenly Israel. He walked by faith out of that palace. And he saved Israel. It's pretty awesome. And what about Joshua? What about Joshua? Verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell, and the people had marched around them after the people had marched around them for 7 days. Now, God says to Joshua, all right, you're going to take Jericho. Awesome, God. What's the plan? Well, what you need to do is leave all your weapons behind in the camp and just walk around the city. Now, imagine when he announced that plan to the people. All right, folks, that city, God said, we're taking that city. All right, Joshua, tell us the plan. Just leave all your weapons behind. We're just going to walk around the city. All right, Joshua, now what's the actual battle plan? No, that's the battle plan. Because our weapons are not the weapons of this world, are they? We don't use arrogance. We don't use violence. We don't push other people aside. We simply walk by faith. You know, I was there at Jericho, across the river, actually, last summer. It was about 46, 47 degrees. It's hot there. They're walking around that city, and they literally walk by faith. I mean, literally. Because God said, if you walk around that city, the walls are going to come down. The people in the city are thinking, they're kind of thinking like your neighbor or your fellow student kind of thinks about you sometimes. You know what? But really, it was a little bit worse for them than it is for you. Let's be honest about it. Come on. It's not that bad. And, look at those guys. What are they doing? They're tiring themselves out so we can wipe them out. And then the seventh day, they went around seven times. Boy, did they look foolish. But you know what? When they sounded the horns, the walls came down. Then who looked foolish? And by faith, they conquered Jericho. Let's read about some of the others. We're basically done here. What more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Jephthah. Jephthah, that's a great example. Now, here's a guy, he had everything, right? He was awesome and amazing. He was hiding in the bushes. But God used him to rout armies. Because in the end, despite the fact that he was scared and kind of wimpy and didn't have a whole lot of talents, in the end, he obeyed God. David, Samuel, and the prophets who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fear of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured, refused to be released, so they might gain a better resurrection. Brothers and sisters, do you realize the resurrection that God has in store for us? You can't see it. I have no evidence of it. Scientifically, it doesn't make sense. But one day, we'll be raised from the dead. And we will be in the city of God with Jesus Christ. Only the eye of faith can see that. Some faced jeers and floggings, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. And if you walk by faith, the world is not worthy of you either. You're worthy of God from God's perspective. They wandered in deserts, in mountains, in caves, and holes in the ground. They're all commended for their faith, yet none of them receive what has been promised. But brothers and sisters, we have the Messiah. We have salvation. God lives in us as his temple. God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So brothers and sisters, as we enter the new year, let us walk by faith. Let us follow Abraham out of Ur, leaving those worldly things behind. They look good, but they have no value. And the things that we're still carrying, let's take them to Mount Moriah. Leave them there as a sacrifice. Thank you very much.